देवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टतृषाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः अथ एनम् मा अपनयत कृत अशेष अघ निष्कृतम् यत् असौ भगवत् नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनम् मापनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनम् मापनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनम् मापनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनामापनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनामापनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनम् आपनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनम् आपनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनम् आपनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत माताजीस अथैनमापनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथैनमापनयत कृताशेषाघ निष्कृतम् यदसौ भगवन्नाम म्रियमाणः समग्रहीत अथ therefore एनम् हिम् अजामिलम् मा डू नॉट अपनयत ट्राई टू टेक कृत ऑलरेडी डन अशेष अनलिमिटेड Aghanishkritam. Atonement for his sinful actions. Yet, because, asao he, Bhagavat Nama, the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mriyamanah, while dying. Samagrahit, perfectly chanted. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. At the time of death, this Ajamil helplessly and very loudly chanted the holy name of the Lord Narayana. That chanting alone has already freed him from the reactions of all sinful life. Therefore, O servants of Yamaraj, do not try to take him to your master for punishment in hellish conditions. Purport. The Vishnu Dutas, who are superior authorities, gave orders to the Yamadutas, who did not know that Ajamila was no longer subject to tribulation in hellish life for his past sins. Although he had chanted the holy name of Narayana to indicate his son, the holy name is so transcendentally powerful that he was automatically freed because he had chanted the holy name while dying. Ante Narayana Smritihi. As Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 28, Yesham Twantagatam Papam Jananam Punyakarmanam Te Dvanvamoha Niramukta Bhajante Mam Drhavrataha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, and who are freed from the duality of delusion, engage themselves in my service with determination. Unless one is freed from all sinful reactions, one cannot be promoted to the platform of devotional service. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 5, it is stated, Antakale chamam eva smaran muktva kalevaram yah prayati samadbhavam yati nasti yatra samshayah. If one remembers Krishna, Narayana, at the time of death, one is certainly eligible to return immediately home back to Godhead. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guroho Sri Yutupadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tat Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanshakalpatarbhishcha Kripa Sindhupya Ivata Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. In this verse, the Yamadutas conclude very positively with an injunction, with an instruction. Ma apanayata, don't take him away. So they're acting, they're stepping in, they're acting as police. And here Srila Prabhupada, first thing he mentions in his purport, the Vishnu Dutas are superior authorities. They gave orders to the Yamadutas, who didn't know that Ajamila was no longer subject to their jurisdiction. So it's been pointed out before, sometimes when things are very complicated and the realm of karma is always very complicated, as Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know which chapter that is? chapter 4, karmano hyapi bodhavyam bodhavyam chave karmana. Karma, the realm of karma is always very difficult. Action, it's always very difficult to understand. To understand action and also to discriminate what to do and what not to do. It's very difficult, actually. So it's not surprising when Krishna says in chapter 16 that the demons, especially, they don't know what to do and what not to do. And he concludes at the end of that same chapter that one should conclude what to do and what not to do on the basis of what the scripture tells us to do and not to do. So even in godly circles, sometimes it's not so easy because in addition to knowing what to do and what not to do, we have to understand cause and effect. If we understand the cause of something, then we can judge its effect. If we don't understand the cause, we cannot understand the effect. And that's really not very easy at all. Judgment. We all have to judge things. It's a bad idea. It's discouraged that people should not be judgmental. But in fact, everyone has to make a judgment sooner or later. And that judgment is quite often based on cause and effect, and these things are not easily conceivable because our senses are imperfect, we make mistakes, our motives aren't always the best, and we become illusioned. So even the Yamadutas, they're representing Dharmaraj, the Lord of Dharma, and Dharma in a limited sense of that term means karma, because there are three options for action in this world. You can do karma, and you can do vikarma, and you can do akarma. So karma, strictly speaking, means not just any sort of action, although in a general sense it means action, but strictly speaking, karma means dharma only. Only action which is performed in accordance with scriptural injunction. A synonym for this sense of the term karma or dharma is karya. Karya. Something which you have to do. And these are the words that Krishna uses at the end of chapter 16. What you have to do and what you don't have to do. That has to be discriminated. So discrimination is the key word of madhyam adhikar, the middling status in devotional service, the person who's an intermediate student of devotional service. So even the Yamadutas, although they're the representative of Dharmaraj, the Lord of Dharma, they were a little confused here, it seems. And so the Vishnudutas, this is another principle here, they had to step in as superior authorities. Someone who has the scepter of authority should not be timid about employing that. And we can learn this from our spiritual masters. Srila Prabhupada was not timid to call someone a rascal. In fact, even in circumstances and contexts where it would not be at all considered to be politically correct, or even in terms of public relations, it would be considered a massive faux pas to criticize someone, Prabhupada had no qualms about telling people to their face that he's a rascal. Mundane scholars, there was a famous anecdote. Prabhupada was talking with a Sanskrit scholar on one occasion, and they were talking in Sanskrit back and forth. So his disciple couldn't understand much of the conversation until maybe after 15 or 20 minutes, the scholar switched into English and he said, "Am I to understand, sir, that you're telling me that everything that I have learned so far is nonsense and that I'm actually a fool and a rascal?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." So this is Srila Prabhupada's adhikar. He had that scepter of authority, so to speak. So we have to remember, of course, first deserve, then desire. But somebody has to take charge. In modern society, sometimes it's a problem because nobody really wants to take charge. People who live in glass houses should not throw stones. And everyone in modern society, practically speaking, lives in a glass house, so he keeps chup, he keeps quiet, doesn't want to say anything. So dharma runs rampant in that circumstance. So strong leadership is something that's very admirable, and here the Vishnudutas, at least implicitly, they're giving this example. They're stepping in and saying, "Well, actually, no, you're wrong. This man is innocent because he's chanted the holy name Narayan." And Srila Prabhupada, obviously here, he accepts them as superior authorities. So that's one thing. Now, the other thing is that although he had chanted the holy name of Narayana to indicate his son, the holy name is so transcendentally powerful that Ajamil was automatically freed because he had chanted the holy name while dying. Now, it would seem that at this point in the purport, Srila Prabhupada should quote the verse that he concludes his purport with, Antakale chamam evam smaran muktva kalevaram yah prayati samadbhavam yati nasti atrasamshaya. There's no doubt about this, Krishna says, that somebody who is at the time of death remembering me only and quits his body, he goes to madbhava. Madbhava, we were discussing yesterday, it can mean a couple of different things, according to our acharyas commenting on Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, text 10. Madbhava can mean transcendental love for me. Bhava in the senses of bhava bhakti. But bhava, strictly speaking, a literal translation of the term bhava means my existence. So he attains existence similar to mine. Either he gets sarupya mukti or he gets spiritual, what we call it, tanmayata, identity with the Lord in the sense that one can understand the nature of spirit and he fully identifies with that spirit. This, of course, is the last snare of Maya, because when we identify with spirit, when we understand spirit and identify fully with it, then we realize, oh my God, I'm not different from my japa in quality. I'm not different from the holy name. This is freaky. So when that happens to someone, a mature jnani, when he gets this realization, it actually becomes the most powerful non-devotional attraction that can possibly exist in any world. We're not there yet, therefore we don't recognize the threat and tend to brush it off lightly, as we might as well, because nobody really has that adhikar. But when someone actually becomes very advanced, this is a big problem that's coming down the tubes, so consider yourself forewarned. But anyway, don't want to divert too much there. Srila Prabhupada then quotes this verse from chapter 7, Yesham Tvantakatam Papam Jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajanti mandrurhavataha. Krishna says, the ones who worship me with love, bhajante, drurhavrata, with firm determination, unshakable resolve, those are the ones, te, who are freed, nirmukta, from two things, dvandva and moha. You can interpret dvandva moha. I haven't looked at the commentary, so I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know, but there are two kinds of compounds in Sanskrit. One of them is called the Karmadharya Samas, and the other one is called the Tatpurusha Samas. So Karmadharya Samas means you have two words together, and it means this and that. So you can interpret this as a Karmadharya as dvandva and moha, that is to say duality and delusion, or you can interpret it as a Shashti Tatpurusha, genitive compound, meaning the illusion of duality. Either way it works out. For those who are not pious, they're certainly in one or the other or both. When we act in a non-devotional way in general, but especially when we act in sinful ways, it cements in our psychology through the agency of samskaras that are created by sinful activity. It cements a certain conception of life, a certain dualistic notion, which is called moha, illusion, by Krishna here in this verse. So this is why we don't like to sin, because by creating sinful activities we put stumbling blocks in our way. And Srila Prabhupada therefore, he says, right after the translation for this verse, quote, unless one is freed from all sinful reactions, one cannot be promoted to the platform of devotional service, end quote. Not to speak of devotional service, one really can't come to spiritual realization until one is sinless. At least relatively sinless. In the words of the Bhagavatam, nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. At least mostly, for the most part, we have to be pure. Then we get an inkling. Niharam iva bhaskara. Just as when the sun rises in the morning, all the fog is dissipated and the darkness is dissipated, and we get some sense of what's going on even before the sun is visible in the sky, even before full daylight is there. Just in the wee hour, in the dawning hours, we can get some sense of what's what and see our way around. So it's like that also with spiritual life. When we become freed from sinful actions, then we can see things a little more clearly, and Krishna consciousness makes sense. It's the universal experience of most books, almost all book distributors, I would guess, that when you're trying to explain these principles to people who are meat eaters, it's very difficult. They don't get it very easily. And it's like that with all the other sinful activities as well. So, why does Srila Prabhupada insert this particular verse here? It would seem that Ajamila was not really very pious in this life. And perhaps he was pious in previous lives, but it, certainly in the beginning of this life, in his youth, it said he fell down with his prostitute and he spent the rest of his life like that. So how are we to understand this? As far as I understand it, judging from what I've read in this chapter and from what the commentaries have said about it, Ajamila not only had his good samskars from his childhood, we call these the formative years, one's Komara, Komara Lila, we can say, from the ages of birth to 5 years. These are very, very powerful samskars are imprinted on the mind by the grace of our parents. And therefore, we have to thank our parents for the rest of our life, that we have sanity, and that we have some morals, and that we have some character and some inclination for God, even some faith. These are all things that are inculcated through good training by one's parents. Srila Prabhupada even dedicates his Krishna book to his father. Of all the persons that Prabhupada could have thought of on that occasion, he thought of his father, because his father gave him, as he said there, Jagannath Rath Yatra and the worship of the deity of Krishna and all the practices that he later on standardized in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Prabhupada said he actually got them from his father. They were kind of fine-tuned, you could say. Prabhupada at least implied this in certain quotes later on. They were fine-tuned or solidified by his spiritual master, but they were initially planted, those seeds of bhakti were planted by his spiritual master. Of course, we understand that Srila Prabhupada was a nitya siddha devotee, not a conditioned soul. Navamanyeta karhichit, the Bhagavatam says one should never think of him as any less than the sum total of all the demigods in terms of piety, and particularly in terms of devotion. He was some great personality from Krishna's internal entourage, no doubt. At least that's our conviction. But Prabhupada felt this way. And similarly, all of us are duty-bound to respect our parents and to care for our parents, especially when they get old. Because if we can sit here and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam this very moment, and if we can attend Mangala Arati every day, and if we have the human body to hear from the spiritual master with, or chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in this life, it's because of our parents. So Ajamil was given good training by his parents, at least in his youth. It's described in the initial verses of the last chapter. He was at least given brahminical training, maybe not devotional training. That's not clear to me, at least. But then he fell down. Now, the second way in which Ajamil was pious, despite all of his sinful activities, is that even though he was sinful, even though when he was living in his later years with this prostitute and engaging in all kinds of horrific activities, still he was regularly chanting the holy name of Narayana, if only to call for his son. So it was natural that here at the time of death, Mriyamana Samagrahit Bhagavan Nama. He, the verb here is used grih, which means to grab something. Just like sometimes we hear of planets, graha. Planet is called a graha. It grabs you. When you're in the grip of a particular planet, say Rahu or Ketu or Shani, you can hardly do anything. You will do things that you cannot imagine doing. Your whole character has changed. I've seen it happen. We've all experienced it as well, to some degree at least. So here we have the word samagrahit, completely agrahit. He grabbed it. He grabbed onto the holy name in a helpless state of mind. At the time of death, Mriyamana, while he was dying. And because it was Bhagavan Nama, it was the name of the Lord, here it stated, Krita Ashesha Aghanishkritam. He had thereby already performed unlimited atonement for unlimited aghas, unlimited sinful reactions. We can take this as ashesha agha, unlimited sins that he had committed. Therefore, he was considered to be pious. Just once chanting the holy name, but the acharyas point out that throughout his life, even throughout his sinful life, Ajamila had many times also chanted this holy name of Narayan, if only to indicate his son. So, Athainam Ma Apanayata, the Vishnudutas give this instruction, don't take him, he's ours, he's pure, he's been freed already, there's no need for this. So then Prabhupada concludes, if one remembers Krishna Narayana at the time of death, one is certainly eligible to return immediately home, back to Godhead. Now, the word that Prabhupada uses here is immediate. He doesn't have to take any more time. He can go home straight if he remembers Krishna. Now, we know that this didn't happen with Ajamil. Ajamil went to Haridwar. He was released back into his body, it seems, and he wisened up, and he went to Haridwar, and he practiced devotional service there. He was living in a Vaishnava temple, and then he went back to Godhead. But even here, Prabhupada is concluding on the positive note. If one remembers Narayan in much the same way that Ajamila did, it would seem he can immediately return home back to Godhead. Anybody have any questions on this verse? Arjita Prabhu?
For the wrong reason, or they overlook people who should be arrested. They're always making mistakes. So is it like that with the Yamadutas? They get some general training, then they cruise around the universe and pick up people. Sometimes they make mistakes. Or is it Yamaraj's direct instruction? Go and get this person. He's about to die and he's sinful. And if that's the case, then this whole Leela was Yamaraj's mistake, not the Dutas. It was actually his mistake, if that's the case.
Yeah, this is a very consequential question. He's asking, are the Yamadutas assigned to a specific jiva, and they kind of hang around that person and watch him when it's time for him to die, or are they just kind of going around looking for anybody who's ready to die? Because the ramifications of this question are that if Yamaraj himself gave them the instruction, go get this Ajamil, then it's Yamaraj's mistake, and that's a big mistake, and it's a very... It may disturb our faith, because after all, Yamaraj is one of the great Mahajanas. How could he possibly make a mistake? I would prefer, intuitively, for what that's worth. First of all, let me be frank here. I don't know the answer to your question. My sense is that these Yamadutas were acting independent of their authority. Because based on what Srila Prabhupada has said throughout the chapter about this mistake that they made, they were not fully informed of what their master actually wanted or instructed. I can't quote anything to substantiate that, so you can take it for what it's worth. Anybody else have any insights about this or any answers? Dhruta Karma Prabhu?
Well, it's not the best kind of evidence. It comes from reports in India out of near-death experiences, like there was a case when a man named Ishan, who was a gardener, was taken to Yamaraj by the Yamadutas. And then when they, this is just the account, this is just folklore, but the soul is taken to Yamaraj, and then Yamaraj tells the Yamadutas, I meant Ishan the tailor, not Ishan the gardener. So they take him back, and that this guy recovers. He had been pronounced dead, and then at the same time, somebody named Ishan, who was a tailor, dies and gets... It's not Shastra, but it's...
They have a nice word for this kind of
folklore.
Evidence in Hindi. They call it Janashruti.
Yeah, Janashruti.
the people's, what we hear from people. Logshastra is another way. Yeah, Architapura.
I would say based on what transpires later in this chapter that your intuition is correct. Because based on Yamaraj's own instructions later on to these Yamadutas, when they go back, he tells them, you made a big mistake. He didn't say, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. He said, you made a mistake. And he tells him, Agyanat Bhagyanat Uttama Shloka Namayat. He tells them, you know, that if you anybody chants the name even once, they've burned up more sin than they can ever commit. He told them that. So if it was his mistake, he would have said, oh, I neglected to tell you this in advance. But when they come back, he's actually reinforcing all these points, that one chanting of the holy name is sufficient to...
Bhakti Mahajans do not make mistakes, period. So I don't like that conjecture. That said, you know, a lot of these kind of anecdotal, you know, NDE experiences, or even, you know, what do we call them, paranormal experiences that people sometimes have, they do support the idea that those who are working under the direction of universal administrators, like the demigods, I mean, you have to assume that at least some of them are conditioned souls, and so they can make mistakes. And that's where we see, like, things, people see things that people are not supposed to see sometimes. And that might explain that sort of thing, but we don't want to get too deeply into the realm of speculation. Swavasprabhu.
When the Yamadutas went to Yamaraj, they kind of, didn't they imply that Yamaraj never told them about a higher power? And didn't they kind of like question him in that way, that you never told us anything about this? We were in ignorance,
yeah.
And we thought you were the supreme, and why didn't you ever tell us?
Yeah, that's a good point. Not only the Yamadutas, but in other places of the Bhagavatam, we see something like this as well. There are those who think that Lord Brahma is the supreme, and how come you didn't tell us anything about, somebody who's above you? So, you know, it's kind of like you may have a bona fide guru, but just because the guru is bona fide, it doesn't necessarily mean that all the disciples are adequately representing him, or even understand his siddhanta that well. We see that in our own society sometimes, and it has to be assumed that that's similar with the demigods and other highly placed representatives of the Lord. That's one thing, and then another thing is that although they're representing Krishna, but they're representing Krishna in a fairly mundane capacity as universal administrators. And that's not necessarily a flaw or a mar on has any bearing on their devotional status. So this is the uneasy balance between one's material dharmas and one's spiritual dharma. It gets complicated there. Yes, Swavasprabhu.
Yeah, I think in the second chapter, second Bhagavatam canto, Narada Muni is the only one that dispels the position of Brahmaji. Yeah. In other words, he starts asking all kinds of questions in terms of who are you and who's greater than you. But I guess that discourse was only there for the purpose of the conditioned souls. I mean, Narada probably knew, but just to emphasize or clear up this position of Brahma, he questioned him in such a way where Brahma would have to reveal to him who the Supreme Lord is.
Yeah, it's difficult because sometimes, and mark well that Narada Muni is another one of the Mahajans. So it's difficult because sometimes a person who knows better acts like he doesn't know, as in the case with Arjuna and in many other circumstances throughout the Bhagavatam. And sometimes a person who should know actually doesn't know, as we see here with these Yamadutas. So this is conditional existence, folks. This is what it means. It takes a little while to get out of this. To become free from our four defects, it's really not so easy. But in Bhakti Yoga, this is a central theme, if an unstated theme, in this whole narrative. You know, the principle of mercy is what really carries the day. If someone is sinful, but he chants the holy name, even if not perfectly well at the time of death, really what determines whether he wants to go back to Godhead or not is Krishna's mercy. And if a person is working under the direction of bona fide authorities but isn't perfect and sometimes commits mistakes, then Krishna will sometimes cover for his mistakes. So that's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that yoga kshemam vahami, etc. Yes, Prabhu.
He called people rascals, fools and rascals, you know. I think in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions that generally the truth should be spoken palatably, nicely to people, but sometimes even the truth should be spoken unpalatably. But we can't imitate Prabhupada or the pure devotees, but once Prabhupada, I noticed in class once, he was showing his feet. He said, I can show my feet in front of the deities, but you can't. Never forget that. We can't. So could you digress a bit about that, about how much we can't imitate Prabhupada, how much we can't?
Well, as said earlier, that Prabhupada gave us this formula, the first deserve, then desire. In the socio-political convention represented by Chanakya Pandit and Niti Shastras, Dharma Shastras in general, there's a nice verse in which Chanakya Kautilya says that one should express his displeasure commensurate to the potency that he himself possesses. That is to say that, as Prabhupada often did say, when dealing with criticism, if you feel you can do better, then do it. And it's better to do things instead of just saying things. Prabhupada, in general, he dealt with criticism by offering that person a position in which the person could actually try and do something superior. And quite often, the case is that the kind of people who like to criticize are the kind of people who really can't do anything better. So, yeah, first deserve and then desire. And we have to be mindful. Part of one definition of humility is that we are conscious of our own limitations. Mentioned the other day, Bhagavatam says that it is considered to be a quality if someone does what he is actually qualified to do, what he has the adhikar to do, and does not attempt more than he can do, that is to say, he doesn't bite off more than he can chew, neither is he satisfied with doing less than he's competent to do. He's not lazy either, but just right. When I was in college, they used to tell us that when you're teaching a class, you have to go just over the student's head. If you don't do that, then you don't challenge them enough. And if you make it too easy for them, then they get bored and don't learn anything. So that's the fine art of devotional service, is kind of like that, in that one really has to have a lot of empathy. And Prabhupada, and we can see not only Srila Prabhupada, but all great preachers, even in our society nowadays, persons like Indrajina Maharaj, previously Tamal Krishna Maharaj, so many successful preachers who were able to convince people to surrender their lives to Krishna, they have a tremendous amount of empathy. They can understand, they have a very keen sense of where that person is really coming from. Until we have that, it's not so easy to give instructions to others or to criticize others, even if we do have the qualification ourselves. So Krishna says as much in chapter 6, text 32, that the best yogi, he says, I think the best yogi is the person who's able to empathize with all others.
I understand Prabhupada did once say that when you get to, if you don't get to know someone real, real, real well, no one really gets to know anyone that well, you flatter them. And when you get to know them very, very well, you rascal, you should not eat meat. In other words, Prabhupada wanted us to be very careful in our preaching. And then another time I heard, you can chastise me if I'm wrong, that someone was talking about one Mayavadi. I think, what's that? Ramakrishna and that other person, they have these hospital, Ramakrishna.
Yeah.
What's that other guy's name?
Vivekananda.
And he called him, devotee, he said, he's a Mayavadi, he's a rascal. And I heard Prabhupada, someone said, Prabhupada said, well, give him, that's worth 100,000 rupees or something like that. He was pleased with that reward.
Yeah, this is all time, place, and circumstance, and it's not so easy. As I said, one really has to have some spiritual advancement in order to judge when to say something and when to not to say something. Prabhupada actually said some things that I am not able to repeat, even in private. Prabhupada said such heavy things. And, you know, he did. It's on record. At the same time, I mean, we actually, you know, for this reason, we have conflicting instructions from our acharyas. On one hand, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, comparing the gentle approach with the slashing approach, he said, I favor the negative approach. That's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. On the other hand, Srila Prabhupada, quoting Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, said, you take a straw in your mouth and you bow at his feet 100 times and flatter him. Then you tell him that you might want to reconsider some of the things that you've learned. Very gentle. So, time, place, and circumstance determines what is used, and to become a judge of time, place, and circumstance is another thing that takes a lot of experience and insight. So,
didn't Srila Prabhupada say once we should expose four things: a bogus government, bogus scientists, bogus psychologists, and a bogus yogi or incarnation of God. They should be exposed.
Yeah. So, I mean, those who had a lot of Srila Prabhupada's personal association generally will affirm that Srila Prabhupada was absolutely scathing when he was sitting on the Vyasasana and giving a public lecture, but in his personal dealings with someone, he was always the perfect gentleman. Even if he had to tell that person he was a fool, he did so in such a way that the person went away satisfied. That's expert. That's Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Yeah.